This week we open Chumash Shemos, and there's an interesting halacha, although formally the mitzvahs do not yet begin, but there's allusions, of course, all over the Torah. One of the mitzvahs that we have every week is what is known as Shnai Mikra Ve'echa Targum, to review the Parsha twice, and then once with the Targum. And that's referred to in the Gemara, in Maseches Brachos, in Daf Ches. And great things are promised to those who involve themselves in Shnai Mikra Ve'echa Targum, Guluf Parichas Yomim. And in addition to that, it's a mitzvah from the Rabbanon, which just as good as a school of Arichas Yom. Of course, there are many practical discussions and detailed discussions. Do you do both readings first and then the Targum, or perhaps the Targum in the middle? What constitutes a good Targum? Is it specifically Targum Unculus? Is it any good translation? Is there such a thing as a good translation aside from Unculus? Is Rashi's commentary a good form of Targum? In any case, the reason why we're talking about this mitzvah in the beginning of Shemos is because the Baalei HaRemez point out, from Rishonim in fact, that there is an allusion to this mitzvah in the very beginning of Shemos, which begins with the words Ve'ele Shemos B'nei Yisrael. And the words Ve'ele Shemos, if you look at those two words, are Rosh HaTevus, Vav Alef Lamed He, V'chai of Adam Likro HaParsha. Person is obligated to read the Parsha, Shin Mem Vav Taf, Shnai Mikra Ve'echa Targum. So the Remez is in the beginning of Shemos. And what's interesting to ponder is why, after all, the mitzvah doesn't begin in Chumash Shemos, it begins in Chumash Bereishis. So what is it about the beginning of this parsha or of this chumash that this remez finds its home here? As we know, quite near to the beginning of the parsha here, things get very difficult for Bnei Yisrael. Avodas Parech, Bayimaru Es Chayehem. And yet, we should note that the difficulties do not begin straight away. The first psukim are yet Yaakov, his sons, and it isn't until Pasuk Ches that there's a new king and there's new problems, new edicts, and ultimately new persecutions. It seems that for a good while, a good segment of our stay in Mitzrayim, there was not yet conditions of persecution. They began after a while. The question is, did anything happen? Was there a change? Was there a shift in somehow in the situation that precipitated or brought on these persecutions? Or is it very simply a matter of time? And we see from Mefarshim that there is a turning point, and that is referred to in Pasuk Vav of Perek Aleph. Vayomos Yosef v'chol echav v'chol hador hahu. Yosef passed away, and his brothers, that whole generation. And part of what that represents is, it was the old school was in the past, and now people perhaps had new ideas. Vatimalei ha'aretz osam, and that brought about Vayakom melech hadash al Mitzrayim. What we see from even just this simple reading of the Psukim is that even when we're in Mitzrayim, slavery and persecution are not immediate and perhaps not even inevitable. They will come as a consequence or a response of the level of the Jewish people. And what this means is, when we go back to the place where all of this was forecast, the Bris Ben HaBesarim, and Avram is told, Yadoa Teda, Ki Ger Yezarecha Be'eretz Lo Lahem, there'll be strangers in a land which is not theirs, Va'avodum V'inu Osam Arba Me'oshana, So by all accounts, it's clear that of the three items that are mentioned, ger, mean to be strangers, which is its own type of discomfort, the avodim ve'inu osam, slavery and persecution, which are significantly more uncomfortable, it doesn't mean that all of these together will be happening for 400 years, but rather between them. And there could be stages. And stage one is ger yezarecha, and that can last for an unknown amount of time. At a certain point, perhaps, it could then lead into va'avodim ve'inu osam, and therefore, altogether, this will be 400 years. But not that all of them start at the beginning. And the question is, what determines whether or not it will be just, quote-unquote, the first stage of ger yezarecha, or the later, more oppressive stages of va'avodim ve'inu osam? And the Alshech HaKadosh explains that what is happening here is really ultimately a process of refinement. For the human condition, as far as the Alshech is concerned, really back from day one, literally day one, where the Chet Eitz Hadas happened and humankind fell from its original Madrega, the Jewish people or someone is looking to get back to that level in order to become B'nai Yisrael. And it begins with Avram, and then further with Yitzhak, and further with Yaakov, but it hasn't finished, and part of that refinement process are the difficulties of Golos Mitzrayim, and that is why the Pasuk in Parshas Ekev refers to our stay in Mitzrayim as Kor HaZahav. It's a smelting furnace, which is also, it's very hot in the furnace, and a lot happens, it's quite drastic. But the result is a purification and refinement. The question is, how hot does it need to get? That depends on the Jewish people. Part of this is conditional upon the level that the Jewish people retain. If they're on a higher level, perhaps the lower heat, so to speak, of ger yezarecha should be enough to finish the refinement process. If their level drops, then other levels will need to rise. That's what will bring about Va'avodim Ve'inu Osam. And he demonstrates this from such a basic point within that pasuk. And anyone who's looked at that pasuk, it's one of those things that we must have said 100 times at least. That pasuk of Ger Yezarecha Be'eretz Lahem Va'avodim Ve'inu Osam, there's a very interesting pshat question. Namely, the forecast is originally for an entity known as Zarecha, your descendants. Now that's in the singular, and it's referred to in the singular. Ger Yihyeh Zarecha. That's the collective descendants of Avraham Avinu, referred to in the singular, and the verb Yihyeh is also in the singular. Not Yihyu, which means we're referring to one entity, Avraham's descendants. The very next phrase says, Va'avadum ve'inu osam. They will enslave them, and they will persecute them. And the question is, what are we to make of this pasuk, which has shifted, referring to the very same entity, almost within, from one breath to another, from the singular to the plural? And the Alshech says, this is exactly the point. This is where the Torah is presenting the conditions that will determine whether or not it is just, quote-unquote, gerus, or even va'avodim ve'inu osam. For as we see in Chazal, in a number of places, the usage of the singular to refer to the Jewish people represents a higher level. It's a singularity of purpose. They're united together. They're united in goals. And therefore, that's the point. As long as they are Zarecha, in the singular, as long as they retain that integrity, they retain that distinction, so then it's Ger. But should they move from the singular to the plural, which for us means, should they move from qualities to quantities, and their level will decline, so then if it's them and not him, that could lead to Va'avodim Ve'inu Osam. And that is the entire discussion, that it's dependent on the level of the Jewish people, as far as the Ashikh is concerned, in this very wonderful close look at the Pasuk, is embedded in the words themselves. And what is the problem? We began with Pasuk Vav, which says, the old generation had passed on, and a new generation had new ideas. And, relatively speaking, in a sense, the problem was, they found it difficult in new surroundings to apply their old, quote-unquote, standards, values. As if to say, the original generation was born in Canaan, and therefore they were born and bred on the values of Yaakov's family and everything that went with that, and they retained it. But the new generation is born in Mitzrayim, and they enter a different frame. And they're aware that their parents and their grandparents had values and ways of doing things, but they didn't see them as being compatible or cohesive with their new surroundings. One could say the breakdown began when they were unsuccessful in translating the Torah that their ancestors had into their new surroundings. But that's a decline within Golus, because Golus brings with it many new settings, situations, and challenges. And the art of survival as a Torah people in Golus is the ability to adapt and to translate the Torah, which is unchanging and which is our guide, in order to navigate through all of those new situations in Golus itself. This, says Rav Zev Freund of Beit Vegan, is the concept of Shnayim Mikra ve'echad Targum. Shnayim Mikra ve'echad Targum means, firstly, read the Torah and then read it again, meaning to become very firmly and deeply connected to Torah. But that's not enough, because you then need to know, what's the Targum? How do I take those principles, those values, those mitzvahs, and translate them into the world around me, which may be a world that my parents or grandparents didn't know? And if we can do that, then you stay on the level of Yaakov, just a ger. The inability to do that brings on sometimes, lo aleinu, worse troubles. And that is why he suggests the remez of Shnayim Mikra is in the beginning of Shemos, because the concept of reading the Torah and translating it was really the key for the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, as long as they stayed with it, so they were like Yaakov and his sons. To move away from it, they were lost in the inability to translate, and that led to Va'avodim Ve'inosam. So that was true for then and remains true for now. At a certain point, the Jewish people reach a stage where they have a feeling they're not in Canaan anymore. That's the time that they need to translate the Torah to their new set. So from here, let us move. Of course, Parsha Shemos is full with every group of psukim is its own parsha almost. But I'd like to move to a section in Perek Gimel where Moshe already has the vision of the sneh. In Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Gimel and Yud Dalet. And as we will see, there's a major discussion here. Vayomer Moshe El HaElokim. This conversation at the snare is quite long. It's not as simple as Hashem appearing to Moshe and saying, go and redeem them, and Moshe goes. He has questions, and he has objections sometimes, and it takes a while. And one of the things Moshe says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayomer Moshe El HaElokim, Hine anochi ba el bnei Yisrael. Okay, so here I am. I'm going to come to the Jewish people. Va'amarti lahem elokei avosichem shelachani aleichem. I will say, God of your father sent me. Va'amarli mashemo. Let's say, what's his name? Ma'amar lehem. So this is Moshe. He knows the Jewish people. You tell them the Hashem appeared to you. They'll say, what's his name? What should I say? Vayomer Elokim El Moshe. Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. That's my name. And Vayomer, further, Hashem says to Moshe, Ko tomar ibn Yisrael, say to Yisrael, Eheyeh shlochani aleichem. Now, we note that actually the name itself seems to be truncated from the first part of the pasuk to the second. Initially, Hashem says, his name is Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. And then in the next phrase, he says to Moshe, Tel b'nei Yisrael, Eheyeh Shlochani Aleichem. What is behind this shift? Well, we really need to ask, what is the meaning of the name Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh, if we may ask? And the Gemara discusses this in Maseches Brachos and Daf Tes. Rashi quotes it here, that what Hashem is saying to Moshe with these words, Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh, is, I will be with them, and I will be with them. Meaning, firstly, Eheyeh Imam Betzara Zos, I will be with them, and I'll see it through with them in this difficulty, this Golos. Asher Eheyeh Imam B'Shibud Shamalchus, and I'll be with them in subsequent Golios, in other exiles. Now, okay, so that's Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh, twice. Firstly, now, and secondly, in the future. And the Gemara says, Moshe reacted to this, objected to this, with the famous words, Daya Letzara B'Shata, enough for one Tzara in its time. Meaning the Jewish people are in Tzaras now, that's enough. They don't need to hear about future Tzaras, I mean, that's not going to make them feel better. The good news is Hashem will be with you in this Tzara. And there's more good news. He'll be with you in future Golios. I mean, they can do without good news like that, at least for the time being. If it has to happen, it will happen. And that's why Hashem said to Moshe, Tel b'nei Yisrael, Eheyeh shlochani aleichem. They don't need to hear the whole formula. They don't need to hear the whole name. It's enough for them to hear the first Eheyeh, because Daya Letzara B'Shata. And as the many Meforshim Maharal in the Sefer Gevuras Hashem points out, it's not that Hashem was originally saying both and then Moshe pointed out, it's not such a good idea. Hashem told the whole name to Moshe, and then Moshe reasoned correctly that the Jewish people shouldn't hear the whole name, and Hashem endorsed that. Hashem never intended for the entire name to go over to the Jewish people, but rather just the first Eheyeh. Now, in a sense, in order to understand the answer to the question, Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh, that Moshe says, they will ask, what's your name? What should I tell them? And the answer is Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. How exactly does that answer the question? Well, in order to understand that, we need to ask another question. Namely, what is the question? That is to say, Moshe says, the Jewish people will ask me, what's your name? What does that mean by that? They've forgotten Hashem's name. And by the way, we should also note that this isn't really any of the names, so to speak, that we would have expected. And we're familiar with three or four of the names of Hashem, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, or Elohim, or Shakai, or... And these are names that are known to everyone and must be known to the Jewish people. So what do they mean by asking what is his name? And then where does this new name come from, so to speak? Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. The background to all of this, and this is discussed by the Beis Halevi in a number of places, both in his Perush on the Torah and in his drushas. The Beis Halevi has 18 drushas, and two of those 18, number 2 and number 4, are devoted to this question. The background is the question that many Meforshim have dealt with. Namely, the difference in time frame, the discrepancy between the amount of time that we were meant to be in Golos and the amount of time that we seem to have ended up in Golos. We're meant to be there, Bavad Avinu Osam, Arba Me'o Shana, 400 years, and in the event, we're in Mitzrayim for Redu Shana, for 210 years. And there are many, many answers to this question, but one could say that they are divided broadly into two groups. The first group has almost all of the answers, and the second group has another answer. So the first group is looking to account for the 400 years somehow. And there are a number of ways that this can happen. Rashi himself says that actually Ger Yezarecha begins with the birth of Yitzchak, and they're yet in Eretz Canaan, but in different places of Eretz Canaan where Avram's ownership is disputed, and it already begins then. And Yitzchak was born 190 years before they went to Mitzrayim, which means from the birth of Yitzchak until Pesach was 400 years. That's one possibility. Others say that the difficulty of the oppression compressed effectively 400 years of Golus into 210 years. I mean, that's a talent that the Egyptians had. And therefore, it was the quality of 400 years within the quantity of 210, and there are other approaches, but essentially what these have in common, Hatzad HaShova Shebahem, is that they all see the 400 years served in one form or another. However, there is a different approach entirely. And that is, I believe it's also quite well known, that the Jewish people were not there for 400 years. And they were meant to be there for 400 years, or somewhere, and it didn't happen. And the reason why it didn't happen is because it was interrupted in the middle. Why interrupt in the middle? Because the Jewish people had deteriorated to a state that made it impossible anymore, and there is no Jewish people to speak of, not to oppress and not to redeem. The famous words of the Arizal, that the Jewish people had descended to the 49th level of Tumah. I mean, that's as far as you go if you're going to come back. And therefore, everything was suspended, and Pesach happened. And interestingly, in a sense, premature exit, the calling to a halt of Golus Mitzrayim, according to the Beis Halevi, was something that was already told over to Yaakov Avinu on his way down to Mitzrayim. In Parshas Vayigash, so Yaakov, just as he's leaving for Mitzrayim, he stops off in Beersheba and he offers korbanos and he has a vision and he gets a message from Hashem. And the message is, Hashem says, Yaakov, Yaakov, Al tira meidom Mitzrayim, don't be afraid of going down to Mitzrayim. Anochi ered imcha Mitzrayim, I will go down with you. Va'anochi a'alcha gam alo. I will bring you up, literally, well, practically, I will surely bring you up, a'alcha gam alo. We notice the doubling over of the phrase. But Hashem says to Yaakov, don't be afraid. When do you tell a person not to be afraid? When they're afraid. But what is Yaakov afraid of? I mean, it's not merely the apprehension of the difficulty times ahead. Yaakov is afraid that his descendants, and they have Bechira, and it's anything is possible, and it could be that they will not go the distance. That's his fear, that he will go down and may not come up, or there may be not Jewish people, they may dissolve and disintegrate. Hashem says to Yaakov, don't have that worry, don't have that fear. I will go down with you. V'anochi a'alcha gam alo. Hashem mentions coming up twice, representing, says Beis Halevi, two potential times to leave Mitzrayim. Either the forecast time, if they're able to go the distance, and if so, then Golus Mitzrayim will be served. And if not, gam alo. There is an additional time, which is an executive intervention time, that can happen at any time. But the Jewish people will not be lost. Now, the question is, if we may ask, if it's true that the Golus Mitzrayim was not fully served in Mitzrayim, what are we to make of those remaining years? What happened? The answer, seemingly, is that leaving Mitzrayim in the middle will require that the balance of those years of Golus will be served at a later time. That's what will happen with those years. From a certain point of view, it emerges, again, according to this approach, that Galus Mitzrayim is a bit of a mixed event. Because on the one hand, it's liberty, but there is a bit of a bitter accompaniment. Because when the Jewish people are able, there is yet Brit Ben HaBesarim time to be served. And Beis HaLevi says it's very interesting to note that, number one, in terms of the calendar, it is a point of fact that the first night of Pesach always falls on the day of the week that Tisha B'Av will be that year. They go together. That's At Bash, the Aleph of Pesach, is Tisha B'Av. And that's not merely a mnemonic or a way of remembering. I mean, there's a thematic link between them because from a certain point of view, Pesach is the precursor of Tisha B'Av. And it's very interesting to note also that there's it's a curious minhag that is very widespread for people at the Seder, and that is to eat eggs. Why are we eating eggs? There's a number of explanations, but the Ramah himself says, by the way, no one says it's because we're hungry. I think we all understand after motzi, matzah, korech, and who knows what's to come, so it's not needed for that reason. But says the Ramah, it's a simon of avelus. And the question is, well, what avelus? I mean, no, lo aleinu, an egg is a time of avelus. What's avelus got to do with Pesach? It says, Beis HaLevi, it's not so simple. Pesach has an aftertaste to it, that all things being equal, Tisha B'Av, if it's not avoided, is actually a result of Pesach the way that it happened. But that's actually a machlokas. And in fact, Beis HaLevi suggests that this is what is behind a machlokas with regards to the mitzvahs of the night of Seder night. The mitzvahs are Pesach, Matzah, Maror, and now the question is, well, how are they to be eaten? Are they eaten together? Are they eaten separately? And this, as we know, is the machlokas between Hillel and the Chachamim, Zeichel LeMikdash KeHillel. According to Hillel, that's the Korech, they're all together. Whereas for the Chachamim, they're not all together. First you have your Maror, actually, and then you have your Matzah, and then you have your Pesach, and never the twain shall meet. And Beis HaLevi says, it's possible that behind this halachic machlokas, or this mitzvah machlokas, is really a question of how to maneuver these different parts of Pesach. Are they separate? Are they together? According to the Chachamim, Maror is in the past. The only Maror that you need to be thinking about on Pesach is the Maror of Mitzrayim. And first you have that, and then move on to better things. Because that represents the understanding that Galus Mitzrayim was done and finished with. And then, therefore, there's no looking back. Whereas Hillel represents the understanding that they're really bound up with each other. You can't eat Pesach without eating Maror also, because part of what Pesach, the way that it happened, means that there's Maror there as well, as things progress. The balance of Galus Mitzrayim time. Now this is a question that we are discussing, and it's really a fascinating question. If it weighs on our minds, there can be no doubting that it weighs on the minds of the Jewish people. In other words, what sometimes we fail to remember is that no one was expecting to be redeemed at that time. For us, it's as natural. I mean, it's Pesach. I mean, when else, if not now? Except the simple understanding of the Bris Ben HaBesarim, by their reckoning, they were just over halfway through. You start talking about, do they have the concept of Geula in their consciousness? Yes. But for their great-great-great-grandchildren, and they're prepared to keep it alive as best they can, but someone comes and says to them that you will be redeemed, they can expect to be met with disbelief. And it's important to remember that. That was something that they really had to get used to, the notion that they themselves were going to leave Mitzrayim. But one thing is for sure, they'll demand an explanation, because that by their reckoning, The Galus Mitzrayim hasn't finished yet. And this is what Moshe means when he says, I'll come to Bnei Yisrael. And they'll say to me, what's his name? And what that means is, when we refer to a name of Hashem, we're referring to a way that he relates to the world, relates to people. Which means when I say, Hashem has told me that you're going to be redeemed, they'll say, Mashemo, what they will be asking is, how? How will this work? How will he be taking us out? Because it doesn't seem that we're ready to come out. It doesn't seem that the time is right yet. What's the answer to that? Well, the full answer is, Eheyeh Asher Eheyeh. That is Hashem's name here. And what that means is, that is the way that Hashem will take them out. Namely, I will be with them in this galus to take them out, should you ask, but isn't it early? Aren't we in the middle? The answer is yes. Asher Eheyeh. But the way that will be dealt with is later on, in subsequent galios. So that is the answer to the question. There's just one problem. Moshe says they may not want to hear about subsequent galios. Dial at Tzara B'Shata. To that, Hashem says, you don't have to tell them about it. Tell them, Eheyeh, and hopefully they'll be happy with that. But to you, I'm telling you the full picture. You should know. And to them you say, Eheyeh. There's a pasuk in Tehillim, which the Beis Halevi mentions. The pasuk says, I think it's in Perek Kuf Gimel, Yodia Durochov Lemoshe. Hashem makes known his ways to Moshe. Livnei Yisrael Alilosav. His deeds he makes known to the Jewish people. Says Beis Halevi, that's it. And the Medrash adduces that to Geulas Mitzrayim, of course. In other words, the derech, the way that it will happen, that Hashem tells Moshe. Moshe can handle it. The Jewish people can't handle it. They, in the middle of their geula, you talking about other galios, that's best left out. What are you going to tell them? What Hashem will do for them. Livnei Yisrael alilosav. Which means they may never get the full answer to that question of, as to what is his name. And maybe that's better, because if they won't be able to fully deal with it at the time. And this brings us to another question, or to another point. We find that when we talk about leaving Mitzrayim, there are two times that this is that are time stamped as when we left. Of course, we physically left Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh in the middle of the day, high noon. But there is the pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, it's the laning for the last day Yom Tov. Let me read the Kol HaBechor. It's in Devarim Perek Tet Zayin pasuk Aleph. Shamor es Chodesh Aviv, keep Chodesh Aviv, Pesach time, ki b'Chodesh Aviv, hotziacha Hashem Elokecha mimitzrayim, Laila. Hashem took you out of Mitzrayim in the night. That's interesting, that's a pasuk in Devarim. Now physically we went out the next day, but essentially the time of Geulas Mitzrayim, of Yetzias Mitzrayim, is marked by that pasuk as the night. And opinions differ as to which is the ikkar here, which is the principal time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That night time, the way that pasuk is saying, or maybe that's the secondary element. Which is primary? The day, leaving day, or being freed by night? And the question is, well, you know, I'm tachlis, we're out. Does it make a difference when we consider it to be the definitive time? Says Beis Halevi, it makes a difference. You see, the question as to how you reckon the primary time of leaving Mitzrayim, that's a statement as to how you view what Yetzias Mitzrayim, how it worked. You see, the Medrash tells us that as surely as we know that generally speaking, the nighttime represents Golus and the daytime represents redemption. So if you're redeemed, it makes a difference if you're redeemed at night or by day. Because if you're redeemed by day, a daytime redemption represents a permanent redemption. No looking back. Whereas a nighttime redemption is almost a kind of a galistic redemption. It's a break in the night, but it's still night. Which means that this question, as to when to rate the definitive time for leaving Mitzrayim is a function as to how you look at the way that we left Mitzrayim. If we understand that Golus Mitzrayim was over and done with, so then that's a permanent Yetzias Mitzrayim. So they will lay emphasis on the day, because it's a daytime Geula. Whereas those who see that Geulas Mitzrayim is interrupted in the middle, so the leaving happened at night, it's a nighttime Geula. And it's very interesting to see how this too can become a halachic discussion. It's the famous machlokas in the beginning of the Haggadah. This is when most of the cups have not yet been drunk, and everyone has plenty to say on this. Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, Hari ani kivin shirim shana. I was never able to convince the Chachamim to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim at night time. Until Ben Zoma came and he had his drasha, and the Rabbanim didn't agree with it. And so we see that there's actually a running machlokas, not even on Pesach, but just every night of the year. Is there a mitzvah to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night? And if so, why? And interestingly, just to mention this point, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria was never able to convince the Chachamim to mention it at night until Ben Zoma came with a drasha, and they weren't convinced. So all the Mefarshim asked, well, if Ben Zoma came with the drasha, so then before Ben Zoma had the drasha, why does Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria think you should mention it at night? It sounds like the answer here is Ben Zoma. But Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria was looking to convince the Chachamim even prior to that point. But he's drushaless. So how on what basis does he mention it at night? Says the Beis Halevi, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria is of the school that looks upon Golus Mitzrayim as having been interrupted in the middle. Like that Medrash. In which case, for him, of course you should mention it at night. Night is when they were redeemed. That's the significant time. The Chachamim, on the other hand, they don't recognize the night as a significant time, because they represent the school that sees Golus Mitzrayim as having been over and done with. For them, the Ikra time is the day, in which case you mention it a day, but if you're going to tell me to mention it at night, I'm certainly not going to agree with that instantly, and even if you bring a drasha, I may or may not agree and accept it. So this famous machlokas, Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria and the Chachamim, possibly an expression of this very question. Do you mention Yetzias Mitzrayim at night? That depends if you see it naturally as a nighttime redemption. And that itself is a corollary of the question as to whether you see Golus Mitzrayim interrupted in the middle or over and done with. These are some of the highlights of the Beis Halevi's drushes, and I'd just like to conclude with a bit of a foray into an area of Torah that we don't often go into, but let's try and see what happens. The Vilna Gaon explains on a number of occasions that what we call the Tami HaMikra, or the trop, or the cantillation, is not just there to tell you how to read, how to sing the psukim, or how the Baal Kurish should sing the psukim, or how he should have sung the psukim. But actually the Tami HaMikra, the Gaon, presents us with this new idea. They actually have the form of commentary on the words that they accompany. And I'd just like to mention one or two examples, specimens from the Gaon, before then we try and enlist this idea for our discussion. The Gemara says in the first parak of Bava Basra, it tells of two sages of the Talmud, I think Rav Papa was one of them, Rav Hanina was another, that Rav Papa was going up a ladder, and the rung slipped out, and he almost fell and had a terrible serious injury. So his colleague who was there says, after all, someone like Rav Papa, if something like that happens, he makes a cheshbon nefesh. Perhaps he's done something wrong, perhaps he's a little remiss in something, what could it be? So his colleague says to him, could it be that someone came to you for tzedakah and you didn't take care of them in the way that you should? And Rav Papa thinks about it, and Taki came up with something like that had happened, and he thought it wasn't his fault, but in the end he realizes that's where he was remiss. Says the Vilna Gaon, there's plenty mitzvahs in the Torah. of all the mitzvahs, what is it that his colleague gets to thinking that if the rung fell out from the ladder, I guess he was remiss in stocker. What's the rung got to do with stocker? It's good shayla. And he had a hunch. And he was right. So the Gaon says, giving stock is a mitzvah from the Torah. In Parshas Re'eh, Pasach Tiftach Es Yodcha. Well, if you look at the Tamei HaMikra, on the words Pasach Tiftach, you will see that they are Darga Tevir. A Darga is the Z shape, and the Tevir is the downward slope with the dot. Darga Tevir. Says the Vilna Gaon, Darga Tevir are words. Darga is a step, and Tevir means broken. So that means the Pasuk is telling you that if a step breaks, maybe it's because of Pasoach Tiftach. Maybe there was a Tztaka issue at stake. That's a different way of learning Chumash than we're used to. Uba'osa Inyan, with regards to Tztaka as well, there's an interesting halacha that one who gives tzedakah shouldn't give more than a fifth of his assets to tzedakah. I mean, we should all have such a nisyonos, but hamavazbeis ayavazbeis yoser michomesh. He shouldn't give more than a fifth of his money. Okay, now, it's probably a derabbanon, it's known as a takana of Usha, the Vilna Gaon holds that it's actually d'oraisa, but in any case, where is the remez? Well, where do we ever see the Torah talking about someone who's rich not giving too much? The Machzis HaShekel. Ha'ashir lo yarbeh. Ha'ashir lo yarbeh. One who's rich shouldn't give excessively. Okay. Says the Gaon. If you look at the Tamim on the words Ha'ashir lo yarbeh, you will find that they are on Ha'ashir a munach, that's that right angle, and a revi'i, that's the dot on top. Munach revi'i means four left over. Munach is left over, revi'i is four or fourth. And therefore that's the remez. However much you give to tzedakah, be sure there's four left over for every one you give. No more than a fifth. That's in the Aderes Eliyahu. So this, it's a whole new world. And now, with trepidation, if you take a look at that pasuk which refers to the Jewish people leaving at night, which is in Devarim, Perek Tet Zayin, pasuk Aleph. And when we say that they left at night, what that means is that the Golus was interrupted, meaning they came out early. Why did they come out early? Because they were not able to sustain that level of retaining their identity. And how do we see this? In two ways. Tragic ways, in fact. The first is that even when we left, we had to be forced out, because even those that left had a certain aspect of affinity or identification with the Egyptians. The Egyptians had to kick them out. They might not have left by themselves. And there were those four-fifths that weren't prepared to leave under any circumstances. The Chamushim, only a fifth came out. Now, on the word which says, Ki b'chodesh ha'aviv, hotziacha Hashem elokecha mimitzrayim laila, which is where it says Hashem took you out at night, there is a very heavy concentration of Tamei HaMikra. They're not just the normal ups and downs. They're very focused. And they are on ki Gershayim, Bechodesh Ha'aviv, Munach Revi, Hotziacha, has those two crescents, Kadma Va'azla, and Hashem Elokecha, Darga Tevir. That's quite intense for Tamei HaMikra. And inspired by the Gaon, we may suggest that those Tamei HaMikra are really commenting on why the Geula had to happen at night. The first time is Gershaim. Gershaim is from an expression of Gerush, of being banished, forced out. Ki Garshu Mimitzrayim, you see the Jewish people in a difficult, precarious state, even when those that left had to be kicked out. That's number one. Number two, the next Tamim are Munach Revi. Munach Revi, as we saw from the Gaon, is four parts left, because four parts of the Jewish people were left in Mitzrayim. That's the level that we were on. And it's for that reason the next Ta'amim say, Hotziacha, Kadma Va'azla. Kadma Va'azla means to go out early. Kadma from the word Mukdam, early, Azla, Ozal. to go. And the reason why is because of Darga Tavir. It's because the level had been broken. The threshold for the Jewish people was in danger of being broken irreparably. And therefore, putting it all together, because of Darga Tavir, as represented by the Gershaim and Munach Revi, four-fifths left, and the fifth that went out had to be forced out, all of this led to Kadma V'Azla being taken out early. And all of this hovers above the words which refer to Hashem taking us out at night, because that's what it's all about. So, that's a bit of not our norm for Parshanut, but the Torah, as we've seen, transmits on many wavelengths. From there, let's come to the beginning of Perek Dalet, where Moshe again expresses a concern. In Perek Dalet, Pasuk Aleph, Vayan, Moshe Bayomer, Vehein lo yaminu li. They won't believe me. V'lo yishmu b'koli, and they won't listen to me. Ki yomu lo nira alech Hashem, they say Hashem didn't appear to you. So Moshe is concerned. He's got the message and they won't listen to him. They won't believe him. Why won't they believe him? Well, for two basic reasons. The first we've already mentioned, namely, no one in Mitzrayim is prepared to be redeemed. They're not thinking about it. They'll tell you, come back in 190 years and then we'll talk about it. But in the meanwhile, it's just not in their consciousness. That's obstacle number one that Moshe is going to have to overcome. And number two, as the Netziv points out, we've mentioned this in previous years, even if the Jewish people feel that someone is going to redeem them, and we don't think in this way, they have a personality, they're sure he will be the one. And that's Aaron. Aaron was a Navi before Moshe. He's been with the Jewish people this entire time. Many of the Jewish people do not know who Moshe is. Depending on how old he was when he left Mitzrayim, in the earlier years, he's 80 years old now. Anything from 40 to 60 years, maybe more. That's a lot of 40 to 60 year olds who've never seen him before. But they all know Aaron. It's very interesting. And again, it's a tribute to, it's not discussed extensively, but it should be. I mean, it's a tribute to Aaron. He became second to Moshe, and he was happy for Moshe. That's fantastic. But for most people, Moshe comes and says he's the Goel. They say, maybe you mean Aaron. No, Moshe. Moshe says, they're not going to believe me. I'm going to need to convince them. Okay. And the Shaila is, was this a fair, if we may ask, was this a fair concern for Moshe? Was it justified? Apparently the answer is yes, because Hashem responds by giving him osos, signs to convince them. But that seems to be endorsing Moshe's worry. Hashem does not say to Moshe, they will believe you. No. Moshe said, I believe. Hashem said, well, here are signs, and that will help. So it seems like the question itself is justified, and yet it's not so straightforward. Because we find that Moshe is yet criticized for saying this. It's somehow considered lashon hara for Moshe to say this about the Jewish people. And they won't believe you. What do you mean? Why shouldn't they believe you? And how do we see this? We see it through the signs that are given to Moshe. I mean, they have a very specific connotation. The first is that his staff becomes a snake. And the second is that his hand becomes leprous. There are associations with those things. They're Lashon Hara signs. Saras comes for Lashon Hara. The snake is the first being to be famous, infamous for speaking Lashon Hara. And these are the signs. And of course, conceivably, there could be any number of signs that Hashem could have given to Moshe. But Chazal tell us that Moshe is being, so to speak, upbraided, criticized. You speak Lashon Hara about the Jewish people, so your hand becomes tzaras. Except the question is, well, was it a legitimate question or was it not? And the Chofetz Chaim explains, And there's a very interesting medrash in Parshas Vayelech, because Hashem says to Moshe, "Hein karvuya mechalamus." Indeed, your days have come near for dying. Hein karvuya mechalamus. And Moshe was upset that Hashem said, "Hein." That's a really emphasizing word. Hein karvuya mechalamus. Moshe says, "I, Hashem, I praised you with the word Hein." In Parshas Ekev, "Hein l'Hashem Elokeinu Hashemayim Mishmer Shemayim." And Moshe felt that it was unfair that he was being spoken to with the word Hein about such a difficult thing now, but he'd only have used the word Hein to praise Hashem. And Hashem says, no, there's an earlier Hein, because you said, Vehein lo yaminu li. Not Vehein, Vehein. Hein with the men means they. Hein means indeed. It means certainly. And the Chafetz Chaim explains, and this is often the case, obviously, we're not talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, but this is how the Medrash is saying, that Moshe has a legitimate concern. Maybe they won't believe me. I need to be ready. Is that fair? It's fair. So what is incorrect for Moshe? To say, V'hein lo yaminu li. They definitely won't believe me. You can't say that. You can't say they definitely won't. And you don't need to say they definitely won't. It's enough to say maybe they won't in order to be prepared with the signs. And therefore this is considered not fitting for the Madrega of Moshe. And the truth is, says Meshech Chochma, Moshe paid a price here. Meshech Chochma looks at these words in a way that only he can. Vayan Moshe Vayomer. We know that Moshe was originally meant to be Cohen, but he lost it at a certain point. He was meant to be the Cohen, and Aaron would be the Levi, but he lost it. And he was the Levi, and Aaron became the Cohen. The question is, at what point? Says Meshech Chochma, it seems at this point. You see, if you look at the beginning of Perek Dalet, and we're familiar with the Psukim, Vayan Moshe Vayomer. Literally, Moshe answered and said. What is the meaning of the word Vayan? What is he answering? Is he answering Hashem? And really the background to the question is, Moshe says at least half a dozen things to Hashem at this point, various concerns. I don't speak that well, and you should send Aaron. And he says a lot of things. And what will I say? But we never find the word Vayan. Conceivably, they could all be Vayan. They're all responses of Moshe. But it's just Vayomer Moshe, Lashem. But on this occasion it says Vayan. That's what the Meshech Chochma is drawing our attention to. Well, what's the answer? Al Derech HaPshat, difficult to say. They're all Vayans. But this is the only time it says Vayan. Well, as we said, Moshe was meant to be the Kohen. But then, as a result of maybe asking too many objections at the snare, he became the Levi, Moshe became the Kohen. Where do we see it? Well, the principal mitzvah of the Leviim is Shira. Leviim beduchanam. The Leviim sing. And where do we see that? Says the Gemara in Erechin and Daf Kaf Gimel. That it says by the Leviim, Va'anu ha-Leviim. And it connects it to the words of Matan Torah v'Elokim, Ya'anenu Bikol. You see that the job of the Leviim is Ania, and that represents Shira. Says Meshech Chochma, so at this point, Vayan Moshe Vayomer. Vayan means that's already an allusion to the fact that he has become Vayan. His job was Cohen, but now it's Vayan of a Levi, Elokim Ya'anenu Bikol. That's a very interesting element that's detected by Meshech Chochma. And we see, in terms of Vehein LaYaminu Li, that the matter goes further, because in Pasuk Kaf Dalet and Kaf Hei, it's a major sugya, and we're only really going to reference it, but he's on the way, Vayib Derech Bamalon, Vayif Gesheu Hashem, Vayivakesh Hamiso. He's in the inn, and he deserves to be killed. Vatikach Tzipora Tzor, Vatichros Es Orlas Banot. Tzipora does the mila for their son, And then Moshe's life is saved. She saved Moshe's life by giving. And what this means is, and Rashi brings us from the Medrash that this enormous snake appeared and it was about to swallow him up. And Zipporah stopped the whole thing. And what's it all about? Well, clearly we see from the Pasuk that Moshe was remiss in not having performed Mila on his second son. And that's what it was all about. Except it's not so simple, because Moshe was in a quandary. And the Gemara Nedarim talks about this. Moshe says, well, what can I do? If I do the Mila, it's dangerous for him to travel. So then I'll hold up the Geula. But then maybe I'll just proceed, but then I'll be neglecting the mitzvah of Mila. So Moshe made a judgment. And that is, I can't hold up the Geula of the Jewish people. But if I give them the Mila, I'm going to have to, will it be another few days? So I'll have to do the Mila later on. Which seemingly is fair. So what was the problem? So Chazal famously say that Moshe spent too long involved in the preparation, the accommodations in the inn. That's a question of moments, but that's again the Madriga of Moshe. But the Meshech Chochma says something else, quite a radical approach here. If the question is, I'm stuck, says Moshe. If I do the Mila, so then we can't go to Mitzrayim. So let's go, but then I won't do the Mila. So I can't do everything. So what should he have done? Meshech Chochma says very simply, he should have done the Mila and left him at home. Why is Moshe bringing his family to Mitzrayim? It's an interesting shaila. He wasn't told to take them. So the two don't need to get in each other's way. The Jewish people need to hear from Moshe now. They don't need to see his son or his wife. So why is he taking them? Says Meshech Chochma, it seems that Moshe took his family to Mitzrayim because this is still part of Moshe quite certain that the Jewish people will not believe that he's really come to redeem them. So how can he convince them? He convinces them by taking his family with him. If he wasn't sure the Geula will happen, there's no way that he's going to bring his family to Mitzrayim. And therefore Moshe was never told to bring his family to Mitzrayim. But he does so anyway as a result of Hein Le'Yaminu Li. But that was unnecessary in the final analysis. And therefore, if he didn't do Mila in order that his son should travel, whereas the reality is he should have done Mila and left his son at home, so Moshe is taken to task for that. It's still an emanation of Vehein Le'Yaminu Li. And in fact, my uncle Rav Kupperman, in his commentary to the Meshech Chochma, quotes his younger brother, the youngest of all the Kupperman brothers, Yitzhak, Dr. Yitzhak Kupperman of Bnei Brak, who suggests perhaps, just to tie things together, that this may explain to us why Moshe was attacked by a snake, of all things. So what's that got to do with anything? Except the point is, according to Meshech Chochma, if the problem here is Moshe bringing his family, neglecting Mila, but he brings his family, he feels they should be there because Behein Le'Yaminu Li, but that's back to Lashon Hara, and therefore the potential danger to Moshe is in the form of a snake, once again, that being that represents Lashon Hara, until Tzipora takes care of things. And that brings Moshe and his family, although Rashi tells us that Aaron met them and sent the family back. Famous words, Allah Rishonim Onu Mitztarim. There's enough Jews in Egypt. We don't need more Jews. He sent them back, and Moshe came, and the rest unfolds and develops in the ensuing parsha of Mishra Hashem. We'll leave it over here for this evening.